Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Life Happens. I'm Lou Piero, your host for this morning from Piero, Connor & Strauss. And this program, Life Happens, brings you information necessary for all of us to plan our futures, prepare for the things that could happen in life. And in our practice, we've been practicing law for a good long time. We've seen it all, like fireman's insurance. We've seen it, so we know. So we're going to share with you some ideas today that I think are very valuable to everyone. These are documents that are crucial to every estate plan that we prepare, and we're going to get into that in just a moment. But before I do, I want to wish everyone a happy 4th of July. Here we are. It's Independence Day weekend 2021, and a lot of things going on around us. But I want to welcome my partner to today's show and talk about experience. I want to introduce you to Peter Strauss, who is one of the preeminent elder law special needs and estate planning attorneys in New York State and in the country. He is a member of the Academy, the ACTEC, and that is the highest level of estate planning. He's one of the founders of the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys. He is the recipient of the New York State Bar Association Attorney Professionalism Award, and that is the none other than the inimitable Peter J. Strauss. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Lou. Thank you for those kind words, and I'm thrilled to be here with you today to celebrate the fourth holiday and all that it stands for.
And I wish you were here with me live in studio. We're back live. I've got Zach, my engineer, through the window. It's just a great atmosphere being in studio again, and that's because we have come out of the pandemic. This is our third week live in studio. And Peter, you are in Manhattan on the Upper West Side, and you've gone through this pandemic in New York City, where it was the epicenter to start. How are things there now as we, you know, talk about independence? How are things shaping up in New York City? I know you've got a mayoral race coming up post-pandemic. What's it like?
Well, the mayoral race is fascinating. It's the first time voting, when you can vote for more candidate, ranked choice voting has been tried in a large metropolitan area. There have been some glitches, but it seems to be working, and we'll know soon. We're down to two candidates, Eric Adams and Ms. Garcia. I think that's right. Can't keep track with all the candidates.
You had a lot of running. Them. Yeah, a lot of candidates. Yeah.
And it's very, very exciting. We should know in a couple of weeks who our next mayor is going to be. Manhattan is returning, and the city is returning to what looks like normal. If you can measure it by the traffic jams, we have traffic jams again. When this first came down in March last year, when I go out of my apartment in the morning to a street, which is a two-way street by the Museum of Natural History, there were literally no cars on the street. It was almost like what happened in a big snowstorm. No cars parked, no cars there. People were leaving town, but the traffic is back and the people are back. I don't know about offices. I think many people are still remaining home and are going to want to work remotely, and that's already raising some interesting conflicts between management and employees about whether they Yes. should return home, want to return home, how this is all going to play out. We just moved the offices to a new space from where we were for a couple of years. And that office is not very busy except for us. We're all working away.
You mean the 260 Madison location. And for those that don't know, we have had a New York City practice since we started the firm in 1999. And I had a New York City presence and part of my practice in New York City before that, going back into the 1980s. But it was, in the beginning, it was just me. And then Peter joined us a little over 3 years ago now. Happy third anniversary, Peter.
Yes, it's three years. This actually 2 days ago,
yes.
July 1st, was the beginning of my joining you, Lou.
And since you joined the firm, we've had a significant growth in the practice in New York City. And we go out onto Long Island, and now we're in Florida, New Jersey, and Massachusetts. But the New York City office now has four full-time attorneys, two paralegals, two legal assistants, and it just continues to grow, which is a testament to your attractiveness, Peter, if I may say so.
Well, thank you, Lou, but we combined the brains of New York and Albany and the loyalty to clients, and it seems to be working. I think people realize that we can help them, particularly about the things we're going to talk about today, mm-hmm. and that we care about them, and that we're there to help. And during the pandemic, we really, I think, did a great job. We were quite busy during the pandemic. Remote document execution that was allowed by governor's executive orders enabled us to serve people long distance and enable them to get their planning done, particularly their healthcare planning documents, which turned out to be very vital during this period. And we will talk more about this morning.
Yeah, interestingly, that governor's order, which was a series of one-month extenders on the ability to do remote document signing, that just expired. It didn't get renewed as of January or July 1st, rather. And so we are no longer able to do notarizations and witnessing of documents virtually. And we were using Microsoft Teams and Zoom and Skype, whatever the client needed to have and was comfortable with. But we did a lot of document signings virtually over that time period. And now it's got to be back to an in-person document execution, which is a big change.
It's a big change, and I think it's not in the best interest of New Yorkers. There is a bill pending in the legislature to restate and reenact document execution as it does exist in many other states, and I think it would be very important to do that. What we saw during the last year was that many people, and this doesn't necessarily relate to COVID-19, who had other physical disabilities, people who perhaps had MS or Parkinson's disease, who couldn't really travel to the city or even within the city very easily. That discouraged them from doing important planning. And what we saw during the last year and a half is that those people were eager and actually did call us to do advanced planning and estate planning. And I think that's a big change that will remain important. But we've got to get that legislation passed so that we can have remote document execution again.
Yeah, it serves so many people. We do home visits, we do hospital visits, we do nursing home visits, and we have to take the big pile of documents that need to be signed, trusts and wills. And today we're going to talk and focus on powers of attorney and healthcare proxies. We have to take them there with us. We have to find witnesses in a hospital setting sometimes, and it's not easy to do. And now things like the power of attorney, as we're going to talk about, just the basic power of attorney requires two independent witnesses and the notary. So that used to all be done from our office with people in a hospital. We did a lot of hospital document executions during COVID. People who couldn't get out, a nurse would literally hold up a telephone and we would do it by FaceTime. So those things are no longer available to us. So now we have to leave our office, take witnesses with us, and go out to those remote locations to get documents signed for people who can't make it to us. And Peter, that just adds to the cost of that whole process.
Very, very much so. And another aspect of this is that if people didn't have their advanced directives, and we will talk about this more in a few minutes, it might have been necessary to have a guardianship proceeding. And guardianship proceedings weren't possible for the first several months during the pandemic. The courts closed down on March 17th of 2020. And when they were able to start doing guardianships again, it was remote by Zoom or Microsoft Teams, which is now what the court is using. And there were a lot of constitutional issues about that. How can you really have a constitutionally sound court proceeding that, one, is beneficial to you because you need the help, but also is a taking away of your rights when your court-appointed lawyer can't be with you, when the court evaluator who has to investigate and report to the court whether a guardian is really needed can't visit you in a nursing home or in your home without, you know, wearing a hazmat suit? These were serious problems during the last year. And while the courts did their best, it wasn't making me comfortable about whether we were doing the right thing. And what this points to, as we'll emphasize, I assume, a few times during this program, do your planning ahead, because that's the way you avoid court intervention and possibly appointment of strangers to manage your lives.
Yeah, you and I have both been interviewed on different programs, radio programs, regarding the Britney Spears case. And a lot of people have interest in that. She's a very high-profile pop icon. And her conservatorship in California has drawn a tremendous amount of attention. So we're going to talk about the issues that she's facing and how you can avoid the pitfalls that she has fallen into. So, and talk about what she can maybe do about it now. But what you can do about it is get a solid estate plan in place. And part of that estate plan will be a power of attorney and a healthcare proxy in New York State. So we're going to come back and talk about that. You can call us if you have questions. Peter, how long have you been practicing law?
I was admitted to the bar in New York in 1963. So if you know anything about mathematics, you can figure it out. But it has been a long time, and I've been enjoying it and continue to do so, especially since I had the privilege of joining what is now Pierre O'Connor and Strauss.
And so, and I was admitted in 1984, January of 1984. So together, the two people you're listening to right now on the radio have nearly 100 years of experience in the legal profession. And you can call us and pick our brains at 800-TALK-WGY. We have phone lines open. That's 800-825-5949. 800-825-5949. Give us a call. We'd be happy to answer your questions. We're going to come back, talk about that Britney Spears case and what you can do to plan your future so that you never end up in court, never end up with people taking away your independence. We'll be right back after this short break. Lucky we are born in the USA. We have rights and privileges that many other parts of the world don't share. When you think about that right of birth, you don't really choose where you're born or who your parents are. You just show up. And if you showed up in the United States, you're given freedoms that were fought for by our forefathers right back to 1776, the Declaration of Independence, and the birth of our nation, the United States, a democracy, where we have the ability to have freedoms, freedom of religion, freedom of speech. And one of the things that we have is a justice system that was built and ingrained into those freedoms. And we have the separation of powers. So we have the Supreme Court, we have Congress, we have the president, and a judicial system which is supposed to protect all of those freedoms laid out in the Constitution, in the amendments. And today we're going to talk about how you can take steps to protect yourself and to do the planning that's necessary. I'm Lou Piro, your host for today, on with my partner Peter Strauss, joining us from Manhattan. And we are part of the law firm that does a lot of planning. We also do a lot of litigation. And litigation happens when you don't plan properly. So remember, you can call us live on the radio. I'm going to give you that number one more time. Jot it down. We're going to be on for a while, so if you have a question that pops into your head or a comment, please give us a call at 800-825-5949, 800-TALK-WGY. And Peter, we've been talking on the radio and been interviewed several times about the case of Britney Spears and talking about independence, freedom, liberty. She has now come to court last week and made a very impassioned speech to a judge, because when she was 25, about 13 years ago in 2008, she had a conservatorship in the state of California imposed upon her by the court. You are a professor, in addition to being all of the other things that I talked about at the beginning of the show, and you teach at New York Law School, running the Elder Law Program and the Guardianship Clinic. In New York, we call it a guardianship. But if you don't plan properly, Peter, and you lose your ability to make your decisions for whatever reason, that's the place that people have to go into that court process. Tell our listeners a little bit about that, the history of that guardianship statute, which used to be conservatorship and committee proceedings in New York, and how it's structured here, and how Brittany maybe can get herself out of jail, out of this conservatorship.
Well, the conservatorship guardianship system in the United States is a state intervention allegedly to help people because they're unable to care for themselves, both in terms of medical decision-making, where they're going to live, and their financial management. It's a balancing of what I call autonomy, our right under the Constitution that you just mentioned, that we all know about but don't understand sometimes the protections it gives us. The Constitution allows us to have personal autonomy. We can make decisions even if others won't agree that they are wise decisions, even decisions that might, in terms of medical terms, result in our death, provided we have capacity that we understand the implications of those decisions. And if somebody thinks we don't have that capacity, they can go to court and have a conservator or guardian appointed to manage their lives. There's guardianships of the person and guardianships of the property.
Mm-hmm. So there's kind of the crux of it. Financial decision-making, which is the guardian of the property, and healthcare decision-making, which is the guardian of the person. And so we're going to talk about those two. Again, I'm going to let you finish that thought, but we're going to talk about how you can plan effectively to keep yourself out of the situation that Peter is now going to describe.
Correct. And our Constitution is, in terms of the guardianship process, is enforced much more strongly in New York than it is in other states. We give a lot of protection to the person who's called the alleged incapacitated person in these guardianship proceedings. Nevertheless, many people do have guardians appointed, and sometimes the guardian may not be the person they would have chosen. It seems, although none of us were in the courtroom because the hearings were closed for the most part over the years, that in California, it's a lot easier to have a conservator slash guardian appointed than it would be in New York. And it appears that Brittany was not treated well from a personal rights perspective. There was a court-appointed attorney, but it seems that he was not very forceful in advocating for her.
Well, it also, sometimes, having read some of the in-depth reporting on the case, it also appeared that she wasn't really communicating with him. So that's a hard thing for an attorney where your client doesn't tell you what she's thinking.
Correct. And that could be the problem. But it appears that over this 13-year period, she did not seek to enforce her rights. Mm-hmm. And maybe that was part of the problem that, you know, we don't know. We weren't there. But there could have been more advocacy along the way to terminate the guardianship. I mean, some of the things that are coming out now are really pretty horrible in terms of the way she was treated, both, you know, by her father, who was her primary conservator over the years.
Yeah,
avoid this happening.
The big issue that came out that was very inflammatory and has really gotten everyone's attention is the fact that she said in court, and this was she was on by video with the judge, she said that they forced her to maintain her birth control and to keep her IUD in, even though she wanted to have more children. Which, when you think about it, what fundamental right could be more devastating than that to be taken away?
Correct. And, you know, we have to ask, why did she not, you know, seek more rigorously to protect her rights? And I think she's on the road to doing that. Mm-hmm. I think there will be more hearings. I think her lawyer will now move to terminate the conservatorship. And again, the test would be, does she have the capacity to manage her own life, even if she makes bad decisions?
Yeah, one of the telling...
You know, we all can make bad decisions. We have the right to do that.
One of the telling facts, Peter, you and I have been talking about this, is that at some point about a year ago, Bessemer Trust, which is a very high level, very sophisticated, very high grade trustee. Bessemer Trust was hired as part of her team. They were appointed as co-conservator of her property to manage her wealth along with her father. And Bessemer Trust just resigned. And if you read their press release, the reason they resigned is they had no idea that Brittany didn't want a conservator, which I find that very telling.
Yes. Look, we can't judge the merits of her abilities today, but she was certainly doing well professionally. Mm-hmm. I don't know much about her personal life, but she continued to grow her talents and be a star, and the whole thing is very strange. But again, I have to keep repeating, each one of us can avoid this by doing the proper planning.
So let's talk about those.
As you said before,
two documents.
We want to talk about those, yeah. The two documents, the two fundamentals.
So we have for financial decision-making, and again, this plays right into what the court has to do for people that haven't done the planning for themselves. You have financial decision-making. How do you put in place someone who you trust and give them the authority that they need if you lose your capacity to make financial decisions for you, pay your bills, manage your assets, manage your property, perhaps manage a business? That's a power of attorney. On the other side, you have healthcare decision-making and personal decision-making. And in New York State, we do that through a healthcare proxy. And these two documents are absolutely vital to every estate plan. We do them for kids when they're 18 going off to college. We do them for people when they're 88 who haven't done them yet, because it puts that decision maker in place that you choose. We're going to take a short break for the news. When we come back, we're going to break down New York's new power of attorney statute, which just went into effect June 13th, and the treatment of healthcare decision making, healthcare proxy, and all the other documents that go along with it. We're going to make some resources available to you free of charge, including a new healthcare decision making guide authored by none other than Peter Strauss. And we will come back with all of that in the second half of the show. So stay with us. You're listening to Life Happens Radio every Saturday morning on Talk Radio WGY. Be back after the news.
And American guys, we'll always stand up and salute.
Welcome back to Life Happens Radio. And Peter, the news just, it can stun you if you let it. And the collapse of that building down in Florida has everyone's attention. And our heart and our prayers go out to the families of the people who have perished and those that are still missing in that rubble. It's an amazing event in the United States of America to have a building like that collapse. That typically doesn't happen here. That's a third world problem usually. But there it is. And those people had no idea at 1:20 in the morning in their beds, in their kitchens, in their bathrooms, that all of a sudden life was wiped out. And some of the stories, Peter, that came out of that for people who heard some rumblings, got themselves out of the building, ran down the block. They thought it was an earthquake. You just never know what's going to happen. And one of the things that happens, people, is that you become incapacitated. And that could be a car accident. That could be walking down the street and slipping and falling. That could be an illness. That could be a whole host of things. Or as people age, that could simply be the natural cognitive changes that happen due to dementia, Alzheimer's, and other types of cognitive impairments. And we talked in the first half of the show about the remedies where you fail to plan. If you just don't do anything, where do you end up? And in most cases, failure to plan is planning to fail. You end up in court in a very expensive, very public, very degrading, and very difficult to manage guardianship or California, like Britney Spears, conservatorship. So we're going to talk now about two documents that you can put in place very simply, but with a lot of nuance, to make sure that you have the right documents, the right people, the right empowerment for them to make decisions on your behalf. And Peter, you've written a lot on these topics. I want to point folks to our website, which is pierrolaw.com. That's PIERROLAW.com. It is a treasure trove of legal information, And you did a piece, along with myself, on the new power of attorney statute. And that just went into effect on June 13th. So here we are again with a new law. And we've been in our office, we have been having meeting after meeting trying to define our new document to make sure that it has the right balance, as you said, of empowerment and control. And on our blog, if you go to the blog section on our website, it's new power of attorney law takes effect June 13th in New York State. Let's talk about that, Peter. But if you guys want to get that, just go right to the website, purolaw.com. You can download the blog, read about it. But Peter, this new statute is designed to fix some things that came into the law in 2009, retaining some of those changes, but also taking away one of the things that we thought was a bit cumbersome, the statutory gifts rider.
Correct. An agent acting under your power of attorney, the agent is the person that you appoint to take action for you, both on your property management and then in the healthcare proxy for healthcare decisions. We call that person the agent under both directives. The agent could not make gifts on your behalf without signing this statutory gift rider. And it was very confusing. It was a separate document, and in the basic power of attorney, you had to initial a box. Otherwise, the gift rider, even though you signed it, wouldn't be effective. And it caused a lot of confusion and has been replaced now by allowing you to put in the modification section of the power of attorney that you're appointing and authorizing your agent to make gifts. Now, that could become very important because later in life, you may want to do some income tax planning, estate planning, perhaps do some gifting to become eligible for Medicaid benefits if that was necessary. So the purposes and goals of the gift rider are very important, but it's an important conversation you need to have with your attorney, particularly about what are the risks of giving the power to transfer your assets out of your name to benefit yourself in theory, but sometimes there are abuses. There are financial abuse for seniors and even younger people who have illnesses is a very serious question.
So
we simplified the new form by eliminating that gift rider, mm-hmm. but the language has to be drawn very carefully with perhaps some protective devices built in so there can't be abuse of that right to transfer your assets.
Yep. I'm going to take the other side of that argument because we have case after case that comes into our office where people, you know, 5, 10, 20 years ago, did a power of attorney with their local, quote-unquote, local attorney. And that might be the same attorney that did the closing on their first home purchase, you know, did a traffic ticket for them, and they go to them to get a simple will done, and they do a power of attorney. And we have three cases in our office right now where the power of attorney was done without any gifting authority. So that gifting authority is absent. And now the individuals have lost capacity and can't sign new powers of attorney, and they need Medicaid, but they have some assets. So part of what we do in our firm is help clients qualify for long-term care benefits under the New York State Medicaid program. And that's home health care. That can be assisted living in certain situations and nursing home care. But if you don't do planning, you have to spend all of your assets down to $15,900. And if you want to try to save any of your assets, you need to have the ability for an agent, such as an agent under a power of attorney, to make gifts on your behalf. So in each of these cases now, Peter, we are in a box where we either have to go without gifting and just spend everything down and lose everything, because the cost of long-term care in these cases is about $180,000 per year. So it's going to wipe out their life savings after a couple of years. Or we have to go to court. And back to our guardianship court, we have to go and petition the court, which we're doing in two of the cases right now. We have to go through that whole guardianship proceeding, even though there was a power of attorney, because the powers were inadequate and inadequately drafted. And so that guardianship...
Absolutely correct. And it may be that the judge who is hearing a particular guardianship case, where you ask for the right on the part of the guardian to do the Medicaid planning and make the transfers out of your name may not be sympathetic. That judge may be one of those people who will, over the years, said, I don't believe in the middle-income Americans qualifying for Medicaid.
Yeah. The case law in New York is pretty good, though.
Tragic cases can happen.
Yeah. Case law in New York is very good on this. We haven't lost one of these cases yet. We've done dozens of them. And if you go in with the right argument and you lay out the plan carefully, which we do, to show that the person's interests are going to be protected all the way through the process, they'll be private pay perhaps for a time, and then have an ability to qualify for Medicaid at the appropriate time. The case law in New York supports that kind of planning. And in most cases, you're going to get that through, but it's going to cost you tens of thousands of dollars and a lot of time and anguish going through this whole guardianship process. So that power, Peter, that you were talking about, that gifting power, even though it has some risks, and we can talk about now how to mitigate those risks, if you don't have that power and you need some planning done for you and you lose the ability to do it yourself, you're in a box and you're in court. So how can people protect themselves in the document to make sure that this isn't abused, that the power, the gifting power is there, but it's used properly?
Well, there are several things you can do. You have a right under the power of attorney statute to appoint a monitor who can review the actions taken by the agent and see if there had been any inappropriate decision-making. Now, of course, the monitor sees it after the event had happened. The horse is out of the barn. So that's not a perfect solution. In some situations, I have provided in the gifting powers that it requires the consent of some third party, another trusted person who would have a veto over doing that kind of planning if it was inappropriate. If you have three children and you appoint all three as agents and you have the right to say that each one of them can act separately so that if two are out of town, there is someone available to make the power of attorney effective in a practical way, you might want to require that the gifting provision be exercised by more than one so that there would be either a majority or perhaps unanimity. And again, every one of these solutions needs careful discussion with the person who's the maker of the power of attorney to find a solution that works. You know, when you raise the issue of not following the law and your fiduciary obligations with the client is most likely going to say, oh, I trust my children. Everybody's fine. They're all trustworthy. Yet the facts show that a very substantial proportion of financial abuse among the elderly is done by family members. So this is a very serious problem. While we're telling all of you listeners that it's great to have the power of attorney, there are risks, and you have to tailor your language very carefully.
Yep, and
so
again,
that's really the primary solution.
This new law just came into effect on the 13th of June, so we've only had it for a few weeks. In our office, we've been having numerous sessions, and one of the provisions that our partner Karen Kepler has recommended is a provision that says if a child is a power of attorney, that they cannot make any gifts to themselves unless they make equal gifts to other children who are in the same class, which is another provision that will make sure that if that power is used, that it's used equally across the board. There are cases, we could talk about them all day, where that power of attorney has been used in ways that become questionable later. So there are ways. One thing, Peter, I think is important to enforce, and before 2009, clients used to ask, well, do I need a lawyer to do a power of attorney? And I was ambivalent then. I said, no, the form is simple enough. It's a two-page form. It, you know, you just make sure that you do the things you need and think through the provisions in that document. But since 2009, my answer changed dramatically. This document is now so important and so complicated that not only do you need a lawyer, you need a specialist. You need someone who focuses their practice in estate planning or elder law to make sure that all of these subtleties and nuances in the document are tended to, and that you're asked the right questions, you give the right answers, and they work their way into the language of your power of attorney.
Absolutely. Tailoring the solution to prevent misuse is critical. And I agree. every power attorney should have a gifting provision. If you're 50 years old and healthy, you might feel you're never going to be incapacitated. But as we know, life happens, and sometimes the happenings aren't good happenings. And this is a critical piece of your planning. It preserves your property and allows you to maintain your independence to a great extent and avoid the guardianship.
Mm-hmm. And in New York, we have what's called a statutory short form, which has become a bit of an ironic twist because it was no longer short. It was a 16, 17-page document. But we do have statutory powers and a whole body of law under our general obligations law that makes sure that these documents are treated properly. There are new provisions in the statute that now put some teeth in it so that financial institutions have to accept it. And there are other provisions requiring not just a signature and a notary, but now for the entire document, you have to have a signature, a notary, and two independent witnesses. So more scrutiny on the document, more requirements on how it needs to be executed, more complications with regard to structuring it for gifting and other modifications to the document. But you're right, Peter. This is a document that everybody absolutely needs to have, think through carefully, and get done in a very, very particular way to suit their particular needs.
And the clients should also know that it's not a good idea to have your documents put in a safe deposit box or hidden away somewhere without your agents knowing about them. And you need to discuss whether they will accept these responsibilities in advance. So don't just appoint somebody and not tell them about it, not have a discussion about it. And also, perhaps, in most cases, give them copies and make sure they have access to the original. What our practice is to always have one original copy in our files, because more than one client has lost their original documents.
Absolutely.
They move, the apartment has a fire and you know, so. And we also store all these documents on our documents folder system. So both the power of attorney and the healthcare proxy can be accessed by a client, regardless of where that client is in the world, if necessary.
So go to our website, download the blog. We also have an estate planning guide on the resources page that you can download, which goes through all of the nuances of estate planning, including the power of attorney. But the recent law changes, June 13th, are in the blog that Peter and I wrote. It's at pirolaw.com. Go to the blog section. And now we're going to twist and go over to the other decision-making. We've talked about the financial...
One more caution, Lou, if I can. I think this is important. If members of our audience are planning to do it on their own because they think they have the ability to figure it out, make sure if you go to a stationery store like Staples and buy a form there, it's the one that represents all the changes on June 13th, not from the 2019 version that may be in the bottom of their folder. And also, if you go online to download a form, make sure it's the form that has been tailored to meet the requirements of the law that went into effect on June 13th, 2021.
That's a great point.
Otherwise, you won't have a valid power of attorney.
If you did your power of attorney and executed it before June 13th, the old document still works and is still valid and is still binding, and that's clear. But if you do it after June 13th, you need to use, as Peter said, the new form and the new document. So go to our website, download the blog, pirolaw.com. We also are going to talk in the next portion of the show about the other decisions that get made, and these are critical decisions, very, very critical and literally critical in some cases, and those are healthcare decisions. And we have a new guide that I'm going to make available to you free of charge, and it's brand new, just published in our firm, and this is a guide to healthcare decision making. We're going to come back after the break and talk about it. If you have a question, give us a call, 800-TALK-WGY. That's 800-825-5949. I am Lou Pirro, your host for this morning. live on the radio with my partner, Peter Strauss, joining us from New York City. And we are Life Happens Radio every Saturday morning on Talk Radio WGY. We'll be right back after this short break.
Oh, beautiful, far spacious skies, far amber waves of grain.
God bless you all on this 4th of July weekend, the 245th celebration of the independence of the United States of America. And God bless the freedoms that we all enjoy. And today we're talking about those freedoms and how to protect them, how to protect yourself in the event that you lose your ability to advocate for yourself. Making decisions about one's life and medical care is a basic right of an autonomous human being. In healthcare, as in many areas involving experts and professionals, individuals are only recently getting accustomed to making their own decisions, and perhaps more importantly, questioning the decisions of others, including their physicians, in areas that have a direct bearing on their lives. That is the introduction to the newly published 2021 Healthcare Decision-Making Guide, authored by none other than Peter Strauss, who is live on the radio with me this morning. And Peter, we talked about guardianship and the necessity to plan to keep out of guardianship court. We talked about financial decision-making and how you can do a well-crafted power of attorney under the new statute just effective on June 13th. And now let's talk for the last few minutes about healthcare decision-making, a topic that is very, very dear, near and dear to you, and you've done a tremendous amount of work in this area, and you've written this guide. So let's just, for our listeners, lay out what's possible, what options they have, what documents they should have, and how they should go about this process.
Well, the law now allows us to make just about any decision regarding our health care that's consistent with our own wishes and goals. The rights of people to make health care decisions with some Supreme Court of the United States help and New York court cases, we pretty much can control the kind of medical care that we wish to have. The corollary to that is that not all healthcare providers will honor those wishes. So we start with the document itself. It's a written document where you appoint someone to make decisions for you when you are unable to make them for yourself. In other words, when you are incapacitated. And that's a question of definition that is pretty clear. We know when someone can't make medical decisions. They have to understand the consequences of those decisions in order to give informed consent. They have capacity, and therefore, you don't need the agent to speak. But when you fail to have capacity, when you lose capacity, it could be stroke, it could be dementia, it could be a dementia resulting from either Alzheimer's disease or Parkinson's disease, then your agent has the right to speak for you. Those wishes should be honored. But how does the agent know what your wishes are? Well, you need to have conversations with your agent. Picking your agent is another whole issue, which we'll talk about in a minute. But you need to have the discussions with your agent. You have to understand that your agent should be one who can honor your wishes. The agent's duty is not to make decisions as to what is in your best interest based on what they think, but your agent's obligation is to honor your wishes and advocate for your wishes, even if they disagree. And that's really the test of who your agent should be. And you have to have conversations with the person you think should perform this task to make sure that they will, in fact, meet that test, that they will honor your wishes. If they don't know what you want, if your wishes are not clear, they then can act in what they believe is in your best interest. And it's not always what the doctor says. And when you choose your agent, perhaps if you've got three children and one of them is a physician, maybe it shouldn't be my daughter, the doctor, because your daughter, the doctor, may not be emotionally and psychologically able to make the decisions that you would want because she is, in fact, the doctor and thinks she knows better. So this is the most important part of choosing an agent, is will they carry out your wishes?
So I want to.
But it's a very simple law that you appoint someone to make these decisions for you.
I want to make a couple points on that, but and then talk about what happens if you don't have anyone. But the document here is not like the power of attorney, where you can have two or three or four people on it, and you can require they act jointly, so they have to all agree on decisions, or they act separately so that any one of the powers of agents under the power of attorney can act on your behalf, or we've even structured it so they act by majority. If you have three kids and you want two out of three to have to sign on any document, with the healthcare proxy, and this is under a different law, the public health law, they require a single agent. And there are good reasons for that, Peter, but it isn't the joint agents. You have to pick one, right?
Correct. You don't want three children arguing over what the decision ought to be when you're standing in the emergency room talking to the physician when something has to be decided very quickly. It's not going to work. And that's why the law requires only one agent acting at any particular time. You must have successors. So if your primary agent is mountain climbing in Tibet, and is unavailable, even with today's electronic video calls, you have someone who can speak for you. So it's important not to just to have one agent. You need backup.
There are other documents available for people that don't have anyone that they trust or want to have in that position. So let's talk about those. We have the healthcare declaration and a MOLST form.
Well, the healthcare declaration is often referred to as a living will. In our firm, we prefer to call it a healthcare declaration because that is really a better description of what the document is. And our practice is to have a combined healthcare proxy and the second part, the healthcare declaration part. And that's where the maker of the document can express his or her wishes about the kind of care and treatment that they want, or the kind of care and treatment that they would want to forego or be removed if it wasn't working.
And Peter,
and most classic, quote, living wills use very bad terms, saying, I don't want any heroic measures. Well, 20 years ago, a heart transplant might have been a heroic measure, but today it probably is called routine medical treatment.
Very complicated, very interesting issues. We are running out of time, and I want to make this available to our listeners. If you want to get a very detailed discussion of healthcare decision-making, the 2021 Healthcare Decision-Making Guide, email us, info@pierolaw.com. That's info@pierolaw.com. You can visit our website for all of our webinars and resources. Peter Strauss, thank you so much for joining me this morning live on the radio, and I want all of our listeners to have a very, very happy and safe 4th of July weekend. We'll be back next week, every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. on Talk Radio WGY.